a Solomon, ceased to exist. Two glistening teardrops welled suddenly in his father's eyes, and Malach thought they were the most beautiful thing he had ever seen. Peter choked back tears, staring up at Malach's face, as if seeing him for the very first time.
All the warden wanted was money, Malach said, but you refused. It never occurred to you, though, that my money was just as green as yours. The warden did not care who paid him, only that he was paid. When I offered to pay him handsomely, he selected a sickly inmate about my size, dressed him in my clothes, and beat him beyond all recognition. The photos you saw, and the sealed casket you buried, they were not mine. They belonged to a stranger.
Peter's tear-streaked face contorted now with anguish and disbelief. Oh, my God, Zachary.
Not anymore. When Zachary walked out of prison, he was transformed.
His adolescent physique and childlike face had drastically mutated when he flooded his young body with experimental growth hormones and steroids. Even his vocal cords had been ravaged, transforming his boyish voice into a permanent whisper. Zachary became Andros. Andros became Malach. And tonight, Malach will become his greatest incarnation of all. At that moment, in Kalorama Heights, Catherine Solomon stood over the open desk drawer and gazed down at what could only be described as a fetishist's collection of old newspaper articles and photographs.
I don't understand, she said, turning to Bellamy. This lunatic was obviously obsessed with my family, but...
Keep going, urged Bellamy,
taking a seat and still looking deeply shaken. Catherine dug deeper into the newspaper articles, every one of which related to the Solomon family. Peter's many successes, Catherine's research, their mother Isabel's terrible murder, Zachary Solomon's widely publicized drug use, incarceration, and brutal murder in a Turkish prison. The fixation this man had on the Solomon family was beyond fanatical, and yet Catherine saw nothing yet to suggest why. It was then that she saw the photographs. The first showed Zachary standing knee-deep in azure water on a beach dotted with whitewashed houses.
Greece?
The photo, she assumed, could have been taken only during Zach's freewheeling drug days in Europe. Strangely, though, Zach looked healthier than he did in the paparazzi shots of an emaciated kid partying with the drug crowd. He looked more fit, stronger somehow, more mature. Catherine never recalled him looking so healthy. Puzzled, she checked the date stamp on the photo.
But that's impossible.
The date was almost a full year after Zachary had died in prison. Suddenly, Catherine was flipping desperately through the stack. All of the photos were of Zachary Solomon, gradually getting older. The collection appeared to be some kind of pictorial autobiography chronicling a slow transformation. As the pictures progressed, Catherine saw a sudden and dramatic change. She looked on in horror as Zachary's body began mutating, his muscles bulging, and his facial features morphing from the obvious heavy use of steroids. His frame seemed to double in mass, and a haunting fierceness crept into his eyes.
I don't even recognize this man.
He looked nothing like Catherine's memories of her young nephew. When she reached a picture of him with a shaved head, she felt her knees begin to buckle. Then she saw a photo of his bare body, adorned with the first traces of tattoos. Her heart almost stopped.
Oh my God.
Chapter 120.
Right turn! Langdon shouted from the back seat of the commandeered Lexus SUV.
Simpkins swerved onto S Street and gunned the vehicle through a tree-lined residential neighborhood. As they neared the corner of 16th Street, the house of the temple rose like a mountain on the right. Simpkins stared up at the massive structure. It looked like someone had built a pyramid on top of Rome's Pantheon. He prepared to turn right on 16th, toward the front of the building.
Don't turn, Langdon ordered. Go straight. Stay on S.
Simpkins obeyed, driving alongside the east side of the building.
At 15th, Langdon said, turn right.
Simpkins followed his navigator, and moments later, Langdon had pointed out a nearly invisible, unpaved access road that bisected the gardens behind the house of the temple. Simpkins turned into the drive and gunned the Lexus toward the rear of the building.
Look,
Langdon said, pointing to the lone vehicle parked near the rear entrance. It was a large van.
They're here.
Simpkins parked the SUV and killed the engine. Quietly, everyone got out and prepared to move in. Simpkins stared up at the monolithic structure.
You say the temple room is at the top?
Langdon nodded, pointing all the way to the pinnacle of the building. That flat area on top of the pyramid is actually a skylight. Simpkins spun back to Langdon.
The temple room has a skylight?
Langdon gave him an odd look.
Of course. An oculus to heaven, directly above the altar.
The UH-60 sat idling at DuPont Circle. In the passenger seat, Sato gnawed at her fingernails, awaiting news from her team. Finally, Simpkins' voice crackled over the radio.
Director?
Sato here,
she barked.
We're entering the building, but I have some additional recon for you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Langdon just informed me that the room in which the target is most likely located has a very large skylight.
Sato considered the information for several seconds.
Understood. Thank you.
Simpkins signed off. Sato spit out a fingernail and turned to the pilot.
Take her up.
Chapter 121. Like any parent who had lost a child, Peter Solomon had often imagined how old his boy would be now, what he would look like, and what he would have become. Peter Solomon now had his answers. The massive, tattooed creature before him had begun life as a tiny, precious infant. Baby Zack curled up in a wicker bassinet, taking his first fumbling steps across Peter's study, learning to speak his first words. The fact that evil could spring from an innocent child in a loving family remained one of the paradoxes of the human soul. Peter had been forced to accept early on that although his own blood flowed in his son's veins, the heart pumping that blood was his son's own. Unique and singular, as if randomly chosen from the universe.
My son, he killed my mother, my friend Robert Langdon, and possibly my sister.
An icy numbness flooded Peter's heart as he searched his son's eyes for any connection, anything familiar. The man's eyes, however, although gray like Peter's, were those of a total stranger, filled with a hatred and a vengefulness that were almost otherworldly.
Are you strong enough?
His son taunted, glancing at the Akeda knife gripped in Peter's.